Good morning. We're continuing our look at this book, Leave Your Nets, by Joel. And we established last week that your nets mean your material sense of self. This path is not about getting better companions or more money or better health, although all these things happen. These are the added things. But not if you go after them. If you go after them directly, you won't have them. And you wonder why the principles don't work. If you go after renouncing a material sense of self, a material sense of universe, and you begin awakening to reality in which you live and move and have your being, you will have all these things. They just come with no effort. Why? Because the principle says, all that I have is thine. So we're looking at stepping out of a material sense of self and into that spiritual universe we've been promised. And now we're looking at chapter 2, Knowing the Unknowable. He starts out by saying, truth is infinite. So how great then is your capacity? How big are you? You're infinite. Because infinity cannot be confined to anything less than infinity. And I had an experience once which showed me this in no uncertain terms, so that I could never forget it. I won't go into the experience here other than to say for a moment I grasped, I saw, I felt my own infinity, which, by the way, is your infinity. How many children does God have? One. One child. And it is the Christ. And we, you and I, when we renounce this material sense of self, the you and I, we come into the awareness of Christ as our identity. The one Son manifest here and there and everywhere. But we come into that in a way that ye know not of. We come into that with another faculty. We've been told that the natural man receiveth not the things of God. We've been told that the wisdom of God is foolishness unto man. We've been told, lean not unto thine own understanding. So this tells you that first, here, perhaps on a Sunday morning, as you close your eyes, if you're joining us in our meditation at 11 o'clock to 11:15, here in your meditation, you may feel, come into an awareness of something. It's been called the presence, which I like because that's what it feels like. It feels like an omnipresence to me. It's been called Christ. It's been called I, the I of you, the reality of you. It's been called Father. It's been called God. It's been called is. It doesn't matter what label we put on it with the mind. What's important is not even that we understand it. I thought I had to understand it before I could experience it. That's not true. You can approach God with no understanding whatsoever. And as we said last week, if in your meditation there's an absence of self, then you can come into the awareness of capital S self, or Christ, or the presence. But your awareness is not the intellect. You're not thinking. You're feeling. That's the only word I can put on it, is feeling. but you're not feeling with your fingers. You're feeling with an inner faculty called the soul faculty. When we read these books, we may intellectually agree with the principles, but we're not yet feeling them. We're not yet aware of them. And each principle that's mentioned that you become aware of, well, each principle that you see with your mind, you have to become aware of. It doesn't become reality within and without until you have that inner awareness. Hence the need for meditation. So the beginning of this chapter starts right out saying that you are infinite. But this must become an experience. All the times that Joel said, capital E, experience, the experience. He's referring to experiencing your own inner infinity. He says, because of that, nothing can be added to you, not even truth. Therefore, the only truth of which you can become aware is the truth that is already within your own being. That is why I make one of these talks and I have people send me emails, and one person will say, oh, I had such an inner realization of the immortality of life. I could feel it going on forever. And another person, the same talk, will write and say, oh, I had such an inner realization about my own infinity. And a third person will write me and say, you know, while I listened to that talk, I could just feel that all that the Father has is mine. I could feel an infinite, eternal supply. And I, while I'm giving a talk, I may have my own realization, which is something different yet again from these three people. Why? Because the truth that we realize, the only truth we can realize, is within ourselves. And I think it's fabulous. All right, so that's the first paragraph. The second one says, there are many ways of bringing truth to your awareness, to conscious realization. You see, awareness and conscious realization are the same thing. And when that happens, you bring it into expression and activity. Okay? Now, an intellectual understanding of a principle will not demonstrate it out here, because you've got only a human being and the mind understanding, thinking it's understanding the principle. But when you take it within and you live with it, you practice it for a week or a month or even a year, something happens. You come into an inner soul faculty. It's called awareness or conscious realization. When that happens, then it appears, it demonstrates itself out here. You don't demonstrate it, it demonstrates itself. You see? And then you know, ah, okay. And you go on for your next principle, which will be revealed within you. All right, so he says one way to bring forth your awareness, your conscious realization of truth, is to take a little cabin in the mountains somewhere next to a stream, perhaps, for a month or 6 months or a year or even 2 years, and meditate and pray day and night and day and night and day and night. And maybe only taking a book of scripture, but to abide in the quietness and in peace. Eventually the truth that's within your own consciousness will begin to flow and unfold. Yes, and if you do that, I suggest you take some notebook paper, because when it flows, you're going to want to write it down. I have a journal which I've shared with you, and that's what I do. I write it down. Not everyone, but most. So he says, that's one way to do it. Another way is following some system of spiritual teaching in which there is a teacher with a measure of spiritual consciousness who through a written or spoken word is able to open the consciousness of those who come to him. Yes, I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me. I can draw all those who are searching and seeking to my level of consciousness. And that's what we're doing. We found perhaps a book by Joel Goldsmith, or maybe we heard a talk by Herb Fitch. Something happened to draw our attention to this teaching called The Infinite Way. And we begin to read and take part in Joel's consciousness, or Herb's consciousness. So when we do that, well, he says a spiritual teacher can be a teacher only in proportion as he has received some measure of spiritual light, not because he's read books. And I think we can, again, that brings into play our soul faculty. We can tell, I can tell, if I go to see someone that's speaking, or even if I listen to a talk, I can tell, I get a feeling if the person is genuine, that is, someone who has a measure of spiritual consciousness, or if the person is spouting off quotes that they memorized or things from a book that they have read and read until it's memorized. You can feel the difference. One is just kind of on the surface, and the other you can feel the depth. It's really amazing. This comes as your soul faculty opens up and awakens from all of these meditations. You remember, Joel has told us everywhere he's talked or written, he has told us that we have to practice meditation, not for any things. Why then? We have to practice meditation so that we can become receptive. There's that word again. Receptive to what? Receptive to the truth that flows within. Receptive to the awareness that flows within. Receptive to the guidance that flows within. We have been living for centuries on our best intellectual knowledge, and it has amounted to nothing. In the book Realization of Oneness, Joel talks about we have to bring forth that invisible, incorporeal self. We have to bring forth incorporeal supply, incorporeal companionship, incorporeal invisible life. And that's the same thing as saying we have to put off mortality and put on immortality. We have to step out of a material sense of self and into the spiritual sense of self, the spiritual sense of universe. Okay? So, the spiritual teacher, when you find one that's genuine, you will feel the depth of that teacher. Because of your meditations, because you've started feeling this incorporeal self or incorporeal universe, you will feel the same thing. There's a stirring, that's the word. As you listen, there's a stirring within you. You can feel it. And you know that this person is genuine. Nobody has to tell you. All right? So that's how I gauge it. So when you find the spiritual teacher, he says, they can lift you to their level. So if the spiritual teacher is already living in the invisible spiritual universe at times, maybe some of the time, maybe most of the time, they can lift you to that level. It doesn't mean they lift you and you don't have to do any work. Ha ha ha, I wish it was that easy. No, you're still going to have to do the work. You're going to have to take the principle, work with it, make it your own, have a conscious realization of it rather than a thought about it, and you'll be lifted up. He'll help you. He'll guide you. He'll say things that you go, oh, yeah. But you still have to do the work. All right. This is a pretty interesting line here. He says, when truth is recognized to be an integral part of your being, not even the search for truth will be left to you. How can you seek and search for that which is already embodied within your own consciousness? What that means to me is we reach a place where we're no longer running from this teacher to that teacher to the next teacher to the next. Yes, we may pick up a book and look at it for inspiration. I do that. I read along and something hits me and then I go into meditation. But I am not at the library looking for books and books and books. I have a few favorite and I keep them near me and that's that. But I know that the truth I need is within. And the only way I'm going to demonstrate it is by going within, stepping aside, stepping out of a material sense of me, so that a spiritual sense of I can act. All right, so now here on page 7 he says, there's no use to seek or search for family, companionship, home, or health. I'm paraphrasing and I'm adding the word health. There's no use to seek or search for them because you will never find them. As a matter of fact, it should very quickly become evident to you that all seeking for things, all desire, is sin. And we know from our reading that sin is missing the mark. This is not a moral issue. This is, are you seeking things or are you seeking that conscious realization? I just made a pot of Kona coffee. It's wonderful. It's the real deal. Okay. So it's a sin to seek things. It's not a sin to enjoy them when they come to you, like this cone of coffee. That's not a sin. I'm enjoying it. Thank you, Father. Wonderful. But I didn't seek it. You see, there's a difference. When you practice the conscious awareness, not the conscious thinking, the conscious awareness, these things come. And strange enough, what comes to me is Kona coffee, or Peruvian coffee, or Guatemalan coffee, or Jamaica Blue Mountain coffee. What comes to you might be English tea. It might be chamomile tea. That might be fulfillment to you. It comes as this conscious awareness that you dwell in your meditation, and sometimes with your eyes open, comes as a presence, an awareness, a feeling, and then it appears as fulfillment, peace, and joy. You will have fulfillment, peace, and joy. But it will be fulfillment to you, not fulfillment to me. I like the mountains. You might like the sea. I have other friends that thoroughly enjoy the desert. And this presence will manifest, will demonstrate, will appear as fulfillment, peace, and joy. So why seek these things and frustrate yourself and never find them? When you can come into your inner being and let it appear. You see? All right, so the next paragraph, he describes what it's like to live as a human being. He sums it up by saying you're like a cork floating on the ocean. You're a victim of every wave, every force that comes from every direction, from the water, from the wind, probably from beneath the water. As a human being, man is always a victim and a target. He is forever being played upon by one kind of force or another, economic, political, weather, climate, or food. I think we can all agree that we know that's what it's like when we live in a material sense of self. I can't tell you how long I was a victim of everything. As a child, I was very sick. I had asthma, I had tonsillitis, I had this, that, and the other, measles, mumps, whatever else you can get, chicken pox. Seemed like I was always out of school with something. And, you know, I didn't have any background, any religious or spiritual training, and yet, at 10 years old, I can remember being homesick again, and saying, God, I'm so tired of this, help me, as a 10-year-old. And from then until my 50s, I was never sick again. Some 45 years, I think it was. All right. Let's see what he says in the next paragraph. That's living a material sense of self, and you know it and I know it. But what is this other thing? This invisible incorporeal self. It is not necessary for man to be a victim of the times, the tides, or conditions. By bringing himself or herself into harmony with the divine law, he becomes not the victim of circumstances, but in the measure of his awareness, the master of them. I changed that understanding to awareness because this morning I'm using understanding as I reference intellect, and I'm using awareness as I reference to your soul faculty. So what he's saying is, if you can or if you will practice this meditation and this meditating. You remember he says he doesn't want you to sit down for an hour. That may develop in time. But right now he wants to help you come into that receptivity so you can receive within yourself a feeling, a conscious awareness, a soul faculty awareness, so that you can receive the presence, the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, or the Father, Christ itself, the I. That is what will transform you from a material sense of self to your true spiritual being. They shall all be taught of God, And so when you develop this awareness, this ability to come into an awareness, to be absent from self and come into awareness of your real self, as you develop that ability, you will start living by the invisible. You will start hearing truth that maybe you've never read. You will hear truth that's brand new for you, and it'll come out of this infinite invisible self. And you will know that you are being taught from God. I knew it the first time I met Herb Fitch, which is why I knocked on his hotel room, and when he opened the door, the first thing I said is, "I need to tell you, you're not my teacher. I have a teacher within." And he just lit up like a Christmas tree and said, "Come on in." So, you will be taught of God. All of us shall be taught of God as we come into this awareness. Then he goes kind of into a history here where he says, in the early days, the only way a teacher could impart truth was by speaking it to you, and so if you weren't in his presence, you were out of luck. However, because of the invention of the printing press, these words could be put down. We could have a Bible with scripture. You might have the Gita, you might have Upanishads, but you can read truth. And you can feel somewhat the consciousness of the one who spoke that truth. So he says, today it's possible for anyone to bring divine grace or the power of the infinite into his individual experience. And that's what we've been talking about all morning here so far. Today we know every man, woman, and child on the face of the globe can leave their nets and bring themselves into union, thereby becoming a center or force through which God's grace flows out into their community, speeding the day when the kingdom of heaven will be manifest on earth. Now, you should know by now, it's all about consciousness and what you are consciously aware of. You may be sitting next to someone in a class, and that person is in hell. They feel a conscious separation from everyone. Definitely from God, and maybe even consciously separate from themselves. There was a time in my life when I hated myself so much that there was two of me, and one was hating the other. And that is hell on earth. I know it very well. Now, the other sitting there may be in heaven. Perhaps they had a great meditation that morning, and they're consciously aware of the invisible throughout the room and emanating from people in the room and from the teacher. These people are in the same room. What is the difference? It's not the room. It's not the teacher. It's not the coursework. It's not the shape of the chair you're sitting in or the temperature in the room. It is the consciousness of the one sitting there. And so it's all about changing your consciousness so that you don't live out from the intellect and from your past experiences as a human being. You live out from the infinite, invisible, from the Christ within, from that presence that comes to you, that flows through you. That wonderful presence. You know, that wonderful presence is you. It's your presence. All that I have is thine, including my presence. So, it's all about consciousness. And these words that we speak and these books that we read and these meditations that we have should be leading us to a place where we are knowing the unknowable, which is the name of this chapter. There comes a time in the experience of every person when human circumstances are such that he realizes he cannot go any further in the unfoldment of a happy, successful, or prosperous life without the aid of something beyond humanhood. In such moments, he may turn to a search for God. I know exactly when it happened to me. Exactly when it happened. I can give you the date. It was, well, I can't give you the month, but the year was 1973. I had sort of looked for God before then, but I had a life experience that was so painful that I was either going to sink into a depression so deep and dark that I would have to find a psychiatrist to prescribe me something, or I could take the other choice, which was to reach within for God, beg and sometimes plead for God. And then what happened was I was told that I needed to love God, transfer my love from her to God. And I did it. In the beginning, I pretended. In the end, I fell head over heels in love with this presence and being in its presence and feeling it within me and watching it manifest out here. That became my life's work. And it was a change of consciousness from having an intellectual understanding of some of these books to a conscious awareness of the living God. Not a God from 2,000 years ago. A living God. A here, present now God. A within God. So yes, I know mine, and you probably know yours. Exactly when you turned in earnest within yourself. It's described in the Bible as living with the swine, sinking so far down after deciding to do it your way and live a material sense of life, a material sense of self. You wake up one day and you're in the swine, with the swine in the pen. How did I get here? So you decide, I'm coming home. You may not even know where home is. But through a set of circumstances, something happens, or you hear somebody, or you read something, and you know it's within. And so the search begins. But it begins in earnest. And when it begins in earnest, you begin to have conscious awareness. Your soul faculty opens up, just like a lotus flower, which is why that represents consciousness. It opens up slowly at first. Nobody could take it if it was all at once. Trust me, when I had that experience of about to go infinite, it was quite startling. And so you couldn't handle it all at once, which is why Jesus said, I have many things to tell you, but you can't bear them now. We've reached a place in evolution and involution where we're ready. We can handle them. If you listen and take seriously some of the things that Herb says, you know you have to be a little bit, eccentric, off-center. My people are peculiar people. Yes, that definitely applies to us. He says probably the very word God keeps many persons from finding him. Yes, and my earliest concept of God, I didn't have one. I was in vacation Bible school. I think I was 6 or 7. My mother put me there. She didn't believe in God, but she put me there so I would have something to do while she kept the house or went to work, whatever it was she was doing at the time. And we were, you know, how you build things and glue things and use scissors and rulers and stuff and you make things. And so we were making things in vacation Bible school, and there was a man up front, and he was talking about God. And I don't remember what he said as far as his talk was going, but afterwards I asked him, where is God? Who is God? And he pointed to a picture of Jesus Christ, and he said, that's God. This is how I know I was a little different, even at that age. Because when the break came, everybody went outside to play, and the man went outside to supervise them. I didn't go. I stayed in the room by myself. And I walked up to that picture, and I looked, and I looked. And finally, I heard in my head, that's not God. That's a man. I had nobody telling me that. How did I know? Well, the man was right in one sense, because that is God. That was God teaching us as Christ Jesus. But he was also wrong, because he was saying that the person was God, and the person wasn't God. The person is a man. But I had to live quite a few experiences and quite a few years before I came into the conscious awareness of that. Yes, that is the most advanced son that God has ever had, the most advanced expression of that invisible life called Christ. However, that was also a man. And the man came forth a couple of times. He got angry and he whipped people out of the temple. If he said the words, why have you forsaken me, then he was definitely a man at that point, but you can't blame him for that amount of suffering. In the garden, when he said, could you not stay awake with me 1 hour? Even in his Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often would I have taken you under my wings, even as a mother hen takes her chicks under her wings, and ye would not. You can feel his, in a sense, loneliness, because he would give them everything if they would take it, but they won't. They wouldn't. So you can sense his humanhood. But you can also sense his divinity, his Christ, his presence, his Father within doing these works. And after all these years, I have come to see, as many as received him, to them gives he power to become the sons of God, which means the expression of God. And so we all have this opportunity if we learn to be receptive. That's how we come to know the unknowable, by transferring from a material sense of self which thinks it knows truth to a spiritual sense of self which comes into the awareness of consciousness opening up, of truth flowing out from within. So this chapter to me means everything. We must go beyond the mythical god of rewards and punishments. That is such a heavy burden that religion has placed upon us, this belief in a God that rewards and punishes. We've been taught that. I was taught that very early. You better be on your best behavior. God's going to come back and he'll catch you. That's what I thought it meant when I heard that scripture which says, I come at a moment ye think not. Oh, you better be on your best behavior. He's going to catch you doing that. You know that's not right. It was built in. It was built in my conscience. Even as a child, if I took a candy bar from the store, I knew I was in trouble. Something was going to get me. And I guess maybe that's why a lot of us are try to be good, because we're scared of God, that concept of God. But that's not God. There's no God that's going to get you. But that's not even the hard one. The hard one is believing that there's a God that's going to reward you. How often have we been good? How often have we bargained with God and had a conversation, something like, or maybe even a brief lightning fast thought that says, if I do this, God, can you give me that? If I don't eat all the pudding, can you not have me gain any weight? If I don't get mad at that guy for cutting me off on the highway, maybe I'll have a good day. All these ways that we bargain, and we think God will reward us if we behave as good little children. Oh, that's all material sense of self. Every bit of that. This whole concept of a reward and punishing God, that's part of the material universe and a material sense of self. Years ago, I realized within, God is omnipresence. There's no place where God is not. And God is omniscience. All-knowing, and it knows everything. Every little nook and cranny, it says in the Bible, even down to the marrow in your bones. So God knows everything. God knew us before the world was. And God will know us as we step out of this material sense of self. So, it's impossible for me to believe that God would try to test me. Test me for what? God already knows my capacities and abilities. God already knows how fast I can do this, make this transition. There's nothing to test. He doesn't have to test. That's ridiculous. That's religion. No. If there's a test, I give it to myself. God doesn't do it. And if I test myself, it never comes out right. So I have to stop doing that too. This thing will unfold, guys and gals. This thing will unfold. Naturally, beautifully, like the flower opens up. It unfolds like the dawn. If you've ever been up and outside before dawn, and then dawn comes, and you can see things lightening all around you, and slowly it comes alive, and the birds start tweeting, and there's life all around you. You can feel it. It's awakening. And this is how this comes inside of my being. There's an awakening. And one of the things that goes is the belief in a God of reward and punishment, and thank God. What a heavy burden that belief is. So he seems to be debunking certain beliefs. Here he says, the world concept of supply is that we go out and get it. We work for it. We plan, scheme for it, or steal it. But in some way or other, we do get it. Yes. And we're applauded, by the other material sense of selves when we have successfully got it. However, this teaching reverses that and says that the flow of the Spirit of God in us is the secret of supply. But this is something we could hardly go out and tell to the man on the street. And I told you that experience I had in the middle of Houston, I think, or Dallas. It was 4th of July, Friday. It was raining. It was 6 or 7 o'clock. It was still light out, but everything was closed. It's a holiday, and it's after hours anyway. And I'm driving down from Florida to California, across the United States, in an old Gremlin that had, I don't know, 100 or 200,000 miles on it. A friend gave it to me. And I'm driving along, and it dies. It dies. It just dies. Everything goes off. I have to steer to the right. There's some barrels there for some construction, and I steer close to them, and I stop. And I wait a minute, and I turn the key. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's totally dead. Now what? Well, I did what any spiritual being would do. I panicked. I panicked in my mind. Oh my God, what am I going to do? Friday night, it's raining. I've got $80 in my pocket. How am I going to get to California from Dallas or Houston with a car that's dead? Am I going to just leave it here and step outside and start hitchhiking? I can't take it to a garage. I can't call a tow company. I have no money. I might get it towed there, and then what? I can't pay for repairs. I have to get a job here in Houston and work till I can pay for repairs and then get going. And then I stopped myself right about then. I said, wait a minute, stop. That's the thing I like so much. Stop. And I stopped. And I remembered, hey, if I can touch this within presence, if I can feel it and be consciously aware of it, in some way I know not of, it will appear as my fulfillment, as what I need. Whether it's a tow truck, whether it's a good Samaritan that knows how to stop and help me get going, I don't know what it is going to be, but I know it's going to be right. So I calm myself down right there in the middle of the highway with 18-wheelers rolling by and splashing rain on the back window. I got quiet. I turned within. And I calmed myself down. The fear diminished. And I had a meditation. And I became receptive. That's all. Just receptive. I didn't know a lot of deep truths. I didn't repeat a lot of truths. I'm sure I said one, like, thy grace is my sufficiency, and rested. What happened? I rested until I felt that inner movement, that stirring, that presence announced itself. And I thought, okay then. I tried the car one time, nothing. Two times, nothing. Wow. I know I felt that presence. I turned it the third time, boom, 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 boom. It started up. I drove the rest of the way to California. I used the money to eat on the way. I got there. I pulled it into a mechanic. He looked at it in California, and he said, The brain box for this car is dead. It's fried. You should not have been able to drive it. I know, I said. What do you mean, you know? Well, it died. It died in Houston. And anyway, I didn't go into it much because he wouldn't understand. And that's what he says here. This is something we could hardly go out and tell the man on the street. And so I didn't. I just said, I know. And left him with it. Well, I took that car down to, I drove it down to a Hyundai dealer. And I traded it in on a brand new Hyundai. The sales manager talked to me, the financial guy. And he noticed something I had around my neck. And he asked me, are you involved with this spiritual thing? And I said, yeah. He said, so am I. And he let me walk out with a brand new car. I had no job, no money. I had nothing. Except he knew that if I was involved in this thing, I must be practicing honesty. And I'll never forget it because I made every last payment. And I made sure they were early. And I paid the thing off. And the man was right. He was using his spiritual discernment on that day. And I thanked him. So, what am I saying? I'm saying all this came out of feeling that presence, of having the conscious awareness of it. Not the thought. The thought, thy grace is my sufficiency, did nothing except maybe help me slow down and get quiet and become receptive. But the receptivity did everything, because as many as receive him, to them gives he power to transform this outer experience into heaven. And that's exactly what happened, and that's exactly what happens with every meditation in which this presence flows. Okay. We're not going to finish this chapter today, but that's okay. I'm not going anywhere. I got plenty of time. Now, again, he says, and he harps on this a lot, how can we ask God for something that God must know we already need? Yeah. Going to God and saying, and I've done it, I've been guilty of it, and saying, God, I need $250. I remember back several, 30 years ago, I guess. I need $250 for my rent. And I need it by, you know, Friday. Thursday would be nice, too. And we're informing God. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. But see, we have these concepts. And the concepts are that I can tell God something and I can influence him and he'll reward me with it if I'm good. All nonsense. All of it is nonsense. Not true. Later, as we progress, we realize, oh, that's ridiculous, informing God like he doesn't know. So we learn, and I did at the time, to just turn within, become receptive, have the conscious awareness of the moment. And sure enough, when it came time for the rent, I was working again. I got a check and it was paid right on time. It's fabulous, I tell you. But we don't do this so we can pay the rent. We don't do it so we can have a companion. We don't do it so we can have a check. We don't do it so we can have health. We don't do it so we can have a new house, a new automobile, a new wardrobe of clothes, a new iPod or iPad or notepad or Galaxy or computer. We do it so we can have, slowly, we can be transformed from living a material sense of self to living in a spiritual universe, to watching, being a beholder, Joel says, of this invisible self appearing. And it always appears as fulfillment, peace, and joy to you, whatever's fulfillment to you. And you don't have to tell it. You don't have to bargain with it. You don't have to try to be good. He says it would be just as ridiculous as saying it's not necessary to pray to God for our good. He says, I know, because when I have made that kind of statement, I have seen the shock on the faces of persons who were well trained in religious beliefs. Now, I have a relative who is trained in religious beliefs and happened to ask me one day what my talk was about that Sunday. And I said, oh, it's called Do Not Pray to God. I forgot who I was talking to. And yes, the shock on her face. So I quickly said to her, well, what I mean is do not pray to God for things. You know, pray to God for understanding and wisdom and grace and blah, blah, blah. So I cleaned it up so she didn't think I was crazy. All right, so all right, the prayer that turns to the Father and says, open my eyes, illumine me, give me light. Be a light within me, shine through me, express, fit me to be a better vehicle for thy grace, a better servant of thy will, comes nearer to the higher form of prayer, which is communion with God. All right, so we're going to stop there. Page 12. If you, well, we come into this way of living, and somebody tells us that we are not to meditate or pray for things. And so we learn to say, Father, open my eyes to the spiritual reality. Let me come into the conscious awareness of thy presence. Let me feel the invisible, infinite, invisible self that I am. And we start praying that way. Later, we learn to close our eyes, and sometimes it happens in the twinkling of an eye. Close our eyes before we can think any truth. Immediately the presence, the Spirit, descends upon us. Now those are kind of awkward words. Really what it is immediately we're into our soul faculty opens up within, and we come to the conscious awareness of our infinite invisible reality. But that's kind of not as poetic. I like the other better. I like the Spirit moves over the face of the deep. And that's what it feels like within. Something is moving within you, stirring within you. And you know there is a God, and I am that. And you rest. You rest in that presence. The beautiful, sweet, non-judgmental, all-accepting presence. And you rest in it. And you know you're never alone again. And you know you never have to struggle for anything. And you know that I and the Father are one. And you rest and you experience the communion of that presence and you being one right where you are. And it's wonderful, as Lanyon says. It's wonderful. And there's no place like home. And then you go about your business and all of these miracles unfold before your eyes. And you know, ah, yes, Joel was right. Herb was right. Bill was right. All that the Father has is mine. And you're left with one thing. Thank you, Father. I love you. And for a moment, there's a love that flows out and a love that returns. And in the next moment, there's only the I. Standing where you are. And these experiences come, they really do. And they will come. The whole key is learning to be receptive, practicing the principles we've come to see, and practicing meditation. And we're over an hour again. It comes so fast. I can only say thank you for listening. And I love you.